Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 367. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 great co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It is going good. Another day to talk pitching prospects. Episode 1 was a lot of fun, and there's a lot of fun names here as well for the second part of the pitching prospect show. So I've become a little more infatuated with pitching evaluation every day. So, yeah, I used to be a hitter guy, but now I think I'm a pitcher guy.
You know what's really fun? I'm not sure if I'd call myself a hitter guy or a pitcher guy, but, you know, I mean, I love both. There's elements of both to love, but one aspect of pitching that I love is, like, let's just look at fastballs. There's not, like, one, like, combination of, like, velocity and movement and release height that works. Like, you could have, there's so many different combinations. Like, even, you know, something that works at 93 can be different. Someone has 97, but different release height, different shape on the pitch. It's just like you can have so many different ways to have a good fastball or a good breaker or a good changeup. So it's just like infinite possibilities, it seems like. So I love this breaking down, you know, like what makes this fastball greater, what makes this changeup greater, this slider, sweeper, whatever. So yeah, pitching is always really fun. I think at the ballpark, I lean pitching. Because I think you can tell. I mean, you could. I've traveled 2 hours and seen, you know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. back in his Double A days go 0-for-4 or Bo Bichette. You know that happens.
Yep.
But you can get, so you get like literally nothing good out of that or very minimal. But pitching, like you can go even if it's a bad start. I've seen bad rookie Tiedemann starts. I've seen plenty of bad starts from top guys. But you can get more out of that live look than you can from one live look of hitters. So I think at the ballpark, I definitely lean more towards pitching, but it's all fun. But yeah, this pitching prospects, you know, rankings, we needed two episodes. Need two episodes for Dynasty as well. So it's a lot of pitching talk in the next 2 weeks, but it's definitely needed. So if you missed part one, that's episode 366. That was on a Monday. Go back and check that out. That was the top 20, and we will be going 21 through 50 in this episode. But before we do, usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm sorry, not RotoClegg. That's the first time I've ever done that. I didn't do that right after you changed the handle. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB. I'm at Eric Cross, MLB. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the show, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, the dynasty.go.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more from each of us. And of course, check out all the great things going on over at Rotoballer. Draft kits, so much baseball content is pumping out every single day. Use that code TOOLSHED at checkout to get you 10% off any premium package over at rotoballer.com. All right, so again, you missed our top 20. So if you're like, oh, where's this guy ranked? Probably into the top 20. So check that episode out for those rankings. But we will start with 21 through 35 here. Chris, who is that for you?
All right, Jacob Mizorowski, A.J. Smith-Shawver, Hurston Waldrop, Logan Evans and Luis Perales, 26 through 30, Brody Hopkins, Cade Horton, Santiago Suarez, Logan Henderson, Gary Gill-Hill, 31 through 35, Luis Morales, Jackson Ferris, Grant Taylor, Charlie Soto, and Owen Murphy.
All right, so I have Jackson Ferris, Caden Dana, Hurston Waldrop, Owen Murphy, and Thomas Harrington, and then 26 through 30, AJ Smith, Shaver, Robbie Snelling, Noble Meyer, Emiliano Teodo, and Ricky Tiedemann. 31 through 35. River Ryan, George Klassen, Birdie Hopkins, Cam Caminiti, and Trey Yesavage at 35. Let's start with Ricky Tiedemann, former top five pitching prospect who has had a pretty tough few years, won't even be back until second half of 2025. Chris actually did have him top 20 at number 17 overall. I have him 30. I think that just shows how difficult he is to rank right now. I mean, I've seen, I'd say, 5 or 6 Tiedemann starts, something like that. Hard to keep track overall.
Has he made 5 or 6 starts?
I know,
he doesn't throw.
Yeah, and I've gone to some of those starts, so I travel 2 hours to see him watch pitch 2 innings. That really sucks that happened. But, yeah, he's only made, let's see, how many starts has he made? Last 2 years. So 2024, he made 8, and 2023 was 15. 11 of which were at Double-A. Yes, I probably saw 4 or 5 of those at least. Or maybe, and he had a couple, 4 starts. So he's made 15 starts total in Double-A between 2022 and 2023. Yeah, I've seen 5 or 6 of those. But the fact that he only has a total of 140 innings in the last 3 years is concerning. And he had 78 2/3 of those in 2022. The last 2 years combined for 61 1/3 innings, only 17 1/3 last year. And, you know, it was very sporadic results the last couple of years. I mean, I've seen, as I mentioned, that outing, I saw that he was cruising through the first inning and then completely wheels fell off the second and third inning. I mean, a lot to like here with Tiedemann because the stuff is still really, really good. I mean, you know, low release, lower slot, you know, big slider, solid changeup. The fastball can touch upper 90s. So it's a, you know, power profile. And a big bat-missing profile. But command has come and gone as he's been injured. Even 2023, his walk rate was over 10%. Last year, he had 16 walks and 17 1/3 innings. But obviously, there's so much risk here with Tiedemann. He's still only 22 years old. He won't even be 23 until later on in the season. So maybe he's even back by that point in mid-August. We'll see. But, you know, Chris, where are you at on Tiedemann now? Would you be looking to buy? Are you, you know, concerned about him as a starter long term? A lot to kind of unpack here with Tiedemann.
I think Tiedemann's going to be in his best form ever when he comes back. So Tiedemann has dealt with nerve issues in his elbow pretty much his entire pro career. Led to the inconsistencies, led to him not pitching consistently on the mound. And we saw the injuries. They'd always pop up. He'd have like 3 starts where it'd be like really good. And then there would be the issues with the arm pop up. And finally, they were just like, hey, we're going to give you surgery. They corrected those issues. I don't fully understand like exactly all the medical stuff they did, but I know they went in and fixed everything. So that gives me hope. Tiedemann is back throwing now, which is good. He also had TJ at the very end of July of 2024. So is he on the mound this year? Probably not. I mean, he may make a couple appearances at the end of 2025, but you know, I'm not confident. I don't even know if he throws in the majors this year, if we're being honest. Like, I'd be shocked if he pitches in the majors, just given the nature of his rehab and injury. But I do think that the best version of Ricky Tiedemann is going to come out when he returns. So you look, obviously, at the stuff. It's very strong. I mean, the fastball's impressive. Yeah, it plays well. I think that given the way he works east to west, like it's a heavy horizontal kind of pitch, it's a low IVB, like, hey, let's just let this guy kind of throw it down, let it run kind of thing, some more sinkers than four seam. I think that would be the way we see Ricky Tiedemann excel, probably see the strike rate go up. Is he going to miss more bats? No, but like the reality is the swinging strike rate this year on four seams was not even that great, but it's a unique release high, it's a low slot. He can dial it up, get in the upper 90s. I think Tiedemann's just going to be significantly better when he comes back. The sweeper, changeup are both very strong with Tiedemann. You get a ton of horizontal separation between the two pitches. You look at the sweeper average, like 15 inches of sweep. The changeup it's up to like 16, 18 at times. Like it can average, it can get up to 20 in starts. Like I'm looking at, actually was looking at the average of 18 last year, and not a lot of pitches, but still, like, that's good horizontal separation on the sweeper changeup. Yeah, I think that Ricky is going to come back and be really, really good. I think that he's a dark horse to be the top pitching prospect in baseball. And I say, like, I'm not going to say that's a high probability, because even with graduates, like, I just don't think he's going to pitch enough in 2025 for it to, like, say, okay, like, he's back and we vault him up boards. But I do think Tiedemann's arm talent's there. I think you're looking at 3-plus pitches, honestly. And I think that if the command's there, then Tiedemann's going to be fine. It's just, you know, can he be consistent start over start over start? We haven't seen that, but I think we will see it coming back from this surgery. It was a long process, and it was kind of a should have done it sooner, but here we are, and I think Tiedemann is going to be really, really good.
Yeah, I'm still insanely high on Tiedemann. I say he's one of the best pitchers I've ever scouted live. I mean, when he's on, I mean, it looks like frontline ace, honestly, even like Cy Young caliber stuff that he has. And yeah, 100% agree that, you know, he could definitely come back and be one of the best pitching prospects in baseball and one of the best, you know, pitchers in baseball in a couple of years. You know, I am worried that this is, you know, the latest Daniel Espino, Matthew Allen. I really hope it's not, but this always been like a little, you know, thought in the back of my mind. I'm trying to squash that back down because I love Ricky Tiedemann. It was great to see him several times over in Dublin, New Hampshire. Maybe I'll get to see him another time or two, depending on, you know, where they kind of, you know, bring him back on rehab starts and whatnot. I'm assuming he'll get maybe one or two in Double A again. Who knows? Hard to say at this point, but that's still, you know, like you said, pretty far out, late this, you know, upcoming year, or maybe not even until 2026. So they want to kind of slow play it, which I'd be fine with. But yeah, I think right now is still a good time to buy low on Tiedemann, because I think the perceived value has just dropped so much right now, even lower than where Chris and I have him ranked. So I think it's got a good buying opportunity now, because the price may never be this low again. Another high upside, low floor guy, but for different reasons, this is the next guy we're talking about here, and that's Noble Meyer of the Miami Marlins, someone that I have ranked. Where do I have him? I have him ranked 28th. And Chris, where do you have Noble Meyer ranked? I don't even see him on your list. Am I blind?
Let's see.
Oh, 36. There you go.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I was like, I knew I saw him on there. I was scrolling down too far. So yeah, fairly close, 28, 36. And honestly, I don't even know if I like my ranking of him, because Noble Meyer has phenomenal stuff. He has that big projectable frame, and we've seen him dominate at times, but the command and control is just so inconsistent, and it's even more of a worry. We knew that was a concern coming in with Noble Meyer, but it's become even more of a worry than I think anyone, even the biggest, you know, Meyer, you know, detractor would think, because he had 55 walks this past year in just 74 innings. That was between low A Jupiter and high A Beloit. Did have 85 strikeouts in 74 innings, but, you know, overall it was a 4.01 ERA, 1.31 WHIP in 74 innings. I mean, Chris, where are you at on a guy like Noble Meyer? Because like I said, the stuff is like borderline frontline. Everything clicks with Noble Meyer. Now, this could be one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. I mean, you know, he's got the really good arsenal, you know, three pitch mix, fastball, changeup, slider. Now, all three of those pitches are really, really good when he's on. It's just a fact of he's not on as much as we'd like to see him be on, because he's got well below average command and control at this point. So I don't know. Where do you think 2025 and beyond looks like from Noble Meyer?
Yeah, Noble's interesting. Man, the command has just got to find its way in, and I think that's really the biggest concern. I've watched a lot of Noble Meyer this offseason. He's just a tough eval, honestly, and one that I've really struggled with. But I say, here's the thing with Meyer. It was his first full pro season. That's a big jump for a pitcher to take on that workload over a full season. Yeah, I think you definitely saw starts where the velo would dip. He's very fastball heavy. That's obviously something to note. Like, he led and threw fastballs very often first pitch encounters. Like, it was pretty predictable. Like, you were getting a first pitch fastball from Noblemeyer. So maybe he got too predictable at times. I think the starts that I've watched, it's like, okay, like, you definitely could tell at times, like, he's telegraphing the curveball. You know, he just kind of gets over it a little bit. But I think that Noblemeyer's going to be fine. I think that it's going to be progress, and it's just the fact, can he throw enough strikes and have good enough command? But, you know, honestly, you look at the strike rates, like, his fastball, the strike rate's on it sub 60%. That's a little bit concerning when you're throwing the slider for a higher strike rate. That's obviously pretty notable. But I think that his slider and curve are good. The changeup, it shows flashes of being a really solid offering as well. Actually, you know, when he's on with the changeup, I'd say that it may be one of the better pitches. So, like, looking at this, like, it's a low release height. He's, you know, fairly flat vertical approach angle. It's a good extension. There's a lot of recipes for success with Noblemeyer. It's just, can he locate those pitches well enough? And what I watched, like, there were times where it's like, oh man, like, maybe he just doesn't have a feel of where it's going. Other times, like, he's locating it well. I think for the most part, he locates that changeup exceptionally well, especially down and away to lefties. Like, that's something that I've really seen, like, okay, like, that looks really good. There's times where he completely misses with the fastball and it's hittable. Like, if he's missing middle, it's like, oof, yeah, like, that's not good. But all that to say, you know, Meyer has an arsenal. It's just going to come down to how good the command is. But I think he can be solid. I've got him fairly low. I think he's at a spot where he could continue to rise back up, though.
Yeah, I would lean more towards buy than sell on Noblemeyer just because the upside is so immense with him. But I'd be lying if I said I'm not extremely concerned about that command and control as well. I think he's one. I mean, I don't want to say he's the next coming of Mick Abel, but Mick Abel was similar. You know, I think Meyer has a little bit better stuff than Abel, but Abel was similar in the fact that he had really good stuff but just couldn't find it. And I saw Mick Abel, I think, three or four times live over like a two-year stretch or so, where it was just like, all right, it's the same thing. It's not getting better. And I, you know, hopefully Meyer is young enough where he can still kind of turn it around, because I think he just turned 20 about a week and a half ago on January 10th. So still very, very young. Obviously, he was just drafted in 2023 when he has 85 innings under his belt in the minor leagues, where he has 100 strikeouts in those 85 innings. So I really hope he can turn it around and even just kind of get that fringe average to average command and control, because I think he could be a really, really good pitcher if that's the case. But we shall see. Next up here, I want to talk about all of the fun Atlanta arms, specifically the kind of top four in the system. So this doesn't even, you know, really include, like, we're not going to get into, like, you know, J.R. Ritchie, Drew Hackenberg, Young Carlos Lora, a few others. Like, there's a lot of good pitching prospects in this Atlanta system, but kind of focusing on the big four of Hurston Waldrip, A.J. Smith-Shawver, Cam Caminiti, and Owen Murphy. Chris, you know, let you run with this here first. You being the Atlanta guy here, you know, if you had to, you know, maybe rank, you know, not necessarily how you have them ranked now, but like long term, like, let's say fast forward, you know, 5-6 years, they're all in the majors, all in their, you know, mid-20s or so, you know, who do you think would be like the best arm here, the worst arm, the top two, you know, however you want to word it here. So how do you like these Atlanta guys?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting group. There's obviously a lot of talent with all four of them. Yeah, I think that with Hurston Waldrip, you've got a high ceiling, but you've also got a very low floor. Yeah, I mean, he was hurt last year. I think we saw some progress with him before the injury, and then he kind of set him back. Like, he wasn't great coming back from injury. The walk rates, you know, he was improving strike rates, improving walk rates on the injury hit after that. Not great. A.J. Smith-Shawver, I still believe, is going to be a solid starter. I think that there's people in the organization that 100% believe that too. You know, he got bitten by the long ball. Pitch level data, like, he improved in 2024. It was just the fastball got bitten by the home run ball, and it just didn't work for him. The International League, it's like kind of like the PCL now. I mean, it's not quite as hitter-friendly as PCL, but it's very hitter-friendly. The ball absolutely flies at a lot of these parks. And naturally, we see more home runs from pitchers. And that was the case for A.J. Smith-Shawver. Fastball location just got to be a bit better. But I still 100% believe in A.J. Smith-Shawver and the arm talent. Owen Murphy, I mean, I think we saw prior to the injury, he was blossoming into like such a special arm. Now, the fastball is not there. I mean, he sits 91, 92. Actually, he was sitting 92, 93 this year, getting up to the mid-90s. But, you know, it was improved velocity. Like, it was a step forward from what I saw in 2023 when he was in single A and sitting, like, the first start I saw him, he's sitting 89, 91. I'm like, ooh, this is not what I expected from Owen Murphy. And, yeah, I saw a start in Asheville where he blew out his arm. They brought him out for the seventh inning. Unfortunately, went down and had TJ. So, you know, that was unfortunate, but Owen Murphy is got all the arm talent in the world. And Caminiti, you know, I said on Caminiti's pro debut, I think it's going to be a slow burn with Caminiti. They went the A.J. Smith-Shawver route. They basically stripped his pitches, and he was throwing fastball slider. And this is a guy that has a really good curveball and one of the more advanced changeups in the prep draft class. Also, he was a 2025 draftee that reclassified to 2024. So, a bit younger. I think he had just turned 18 when I saw him at the end of August. So it may be a process. I think Caminiti is going to start back in single A and going to spend a decent portion of the year there where the talent's there. You know, I think that it was his pro debut, so he was amped in the first, but yeah, by the third inning, he was 92, 93. So yeah, I mean, like, Caminiti is going to blossom. It's going to take time. I still think that Waldrop has the upside if he finds the command to be the best of this group, but I also think the floor could be the lowest of any of them. I just don't know. There's a lot of outcomes here. I think he has the floor of being a really solid reliever. He could pitch at the back end of a bullpen, but also he could be out of the middle of the bullpen too. We don't know. I think we need to see a healthy version of Waldrop in 2025. A.J. Smith-Shawver, I still think he's going to be a starter long-term. Could the stuff really play up in the bullpen? Yes, but does Atlanta want to keep him a starter? Absolutely. And I think that he can achieve that. And Murphy, we're not even going to see this year, most likely. So, yeah, he's just kind of a wash with him. But when he comes back, I'll be excited to see what he looks like. That fastball gets a lot of ride. It's a flat approach angle, low release height. So, and Caminiti, yeah, I think that, you know, we know the potential. It's just how long does it take him to get there? So, you know, a roundabout way to say all the guys have talent. They have different floors and ceilings. And unfortunately, Murphy, we're not going to see him this year. And yep. It's going to take time. But yeah, the others, I'm certainly excited to see what they do this year.
Now, if you had to invest in one right now in Dynasty, given their respective perceived value in price tag right now, who would that one be for you?
Probably A.J. Smith-Shawver. People are very down on him. And again, like, I don't think the pitch level data like reflects what people think and like the surface numbers, honestly. Like, you know, looking at what he did last year, they've put him in really bad spots in the majors. Like, let's just be honest. They've thrown him in starts where he didn't need to be pitching. They threw him in San Diego in the playoffs this year. Like, that's a tough spot. His only other major league start this year was in Chicago against the Cubs. And then they threw him in 2023, they threw him in Philly in the playoffs. Like, Philly's like the most rabid, like, that's not where you want to pitch for a young arm. Also important to remember, A.J. Smith-Shawver still just turned 22 years old in November, so he's still very young. But yeah, I mean, we're looking at an arm in A.J. that, I mean, the fastball took a step forward, in my opinion. He had 100 with it last year, sitting mid-90s. It's a low release height, kind of flatter approach angle. Yeah, I look at the pitch and think it's going to play well. I will say, like, naturally, like, it didn't play all that well just due to location. Like, he missed a spot somewhere this year, and that's when he missed the spots. Like, he was allowing the home runs with it, but it's still a high-carrying pitch. Like, from that release height, nearly 18 inches of IVB, that'll play. I mean, considering a 5.8 release, that's very good IVB, and he gets good horizontal on it as well. He threw it for strikes at a 69% rate. That's pretty darn good. I like to see that. You look at the horizontal and vertical approach angles, both solid as well. So yeah, I think the fastball is going to play better, the results base, than it did last year. You know, I still like the curve. I think the changeup has some solid traits to it. He's got to land the curveball for strikes more often. It had a 50% strike rate. So that's a little bit of concern there. But that slider, you know, it's still a solid pitch. I think it solely comes down to fastball location for AJ Smith-Shawver. And at the end of the day, I'm buying that it comes back and is a better pitch this year. I can tell you that he's going to work and figure it out. Like, he's a workhorse and he's got the pure stuff. So yeah, I think I'd buy AJ Smith-Shawver compared to perceived value.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the fence between him and Waldrop, because I think, well, I feel a bit safer about AJ. I think the perceived value has dropped a little bit more for Waldrop, so I think he's a little bit cheaper at this point in time, but he's also more risky. And I think Waldrop has the highest variance of these four. Might have the highest upside. I mean, it's hard to say. So I guess I'll lean Waldrop. I mean, that split change is just absolutely filthy. That's a good slider as well. And I don't think the fastball is quite as good as AJ's overall, being the velocity's there. But I think AJ overall has a better fastball. But secondaries are really good for Waldrop, but he also has some inconsistent command and control that he's dealt with as well. So I guess I'll lean Waldrop, though. I could see, I mean, if you want to go after, I think I see all four of these guys, I think, in general, are solid buys right now. So I think the perceived value has dropped on Waldrop and AJ Smith-Shawver. Obviously, Owen Murphy's hurt, so not a bad time to buy him if you're not, you know, contending. You know, I think Cameron Indy's going to rise. So, I mean, God, you guys just kind of find these guys so easily, Chris. I mean, again, like, talk about, like, Drew Hackenberg and others. Like, Hackenberg and Richie could be, like, you know, the second, third, fourth best pitching prospects in a lot of orgs, but they're, like, what, 5 and 6 or 6 and 7, whatever, in this system. So, a lot of good pitching prospects in Atlanta right now. Definitely more talented on the pitching side, the hitting side in the minor leagues. But moving on here, moving out of Atlanta. But to recap, the first 15 so far from this episode for each of us, 21 through 35 for Chris was Jacob Mizierowski, AJ Smith-Shawver, Hurston Waldrop, Logan Evans, Luis Perales, Brody Hopkins, Cade Horton, Santiago Suarez, Logan Henderson, Gary Gilhill at 30, Luis Morales, Jackson Ferris, Grant Taylor, Charlie Soto, and Owen Murphy. For me, 21 through 25, Jackson Ferris, Caden Dana, Hurston Waldrop, Owen Murphy, Thomas Harrington, 26 through 30, AJ Smith-Shawver, Robbie Snelling, Noble Meyer, Emiliano Teodoro, Ricky Tiedemann, 31 through 35, River Ryan, George Klassen, Brody Hopkins, Cam Caminiti, and Treyus Savage. 36 through 50 for me, got Kendry Rojas, Chase Petty, Matt Wilkinson, Luis Perales, and Cooper Jerpy at 40. 41 through 45, Jonah Tong, Jairo Iriarte, Kate Cavalli, Casey Hunt, Justin Robleski. 46 through 50, Noah Cameron, Jack Leiter. Well, actually, I think I got to drop him down. I don't like that whatsoever. Yes, I ignore him. So 46 is Moises Chassé, Henry Lalani. I'm still not 100% sure of the last name. Gary Gilhill and Chase Hampton at 50. Chris, who you got 36 through 50?
All right. They already talked about Noble Meyer, followed by Jake Bloss, Emiliano Teodoro, Treyus Savage, and Robbie Snelling. 41 through 45 is Moises Chassé, Cade Cavalli, Braxton Ashcraft, Jackson Baumeister, George Klassen. And then the final 5 to 50 is Jaden Hamm, Jairo Iriarte, Ryan Sloan, Cole Drake, and Trevor Harrison.
All right, let's start off with the guy we mentioned. I forget if it was earlier this episode or in the last episode. I think it was maybe last episode when we were talking about Jacob Mizierowski. And that's Emiliano Teodoro of the Texas Rangers, a guy that has a lot of reliever risk, a lot of upside, but you know, command and control issues as well. He's got to walk 50 this past year in 86 and a third innings for Double-A Frisco, but also had a 198 ERA overall and 110 strikeouts in 86 and a third innings. He had a strikeout rate of 30.7%, but that walk rate was a worrisome 14%. I mean, another, I guess kind of similar, you know, question here with Teodoro, Chris. I mean, we saw him last year out in the AFL in November of 2023. We got that, I think it was in the fall start game where it was just the whole experience of him. Yeah. It was, you know, yeah, I think he had a 2 strikeouts that inning, but what was it, like 2 walks, 2 hit batters, 3 wild pitches or something like that. It was just everything and anything you could not possibly have in one inning he had. So that's kind of, you got the whole experience from him than that one inning. But obviously the upside is there. I mean, the stuff is nasty. Another guy could play out of a back end of a bullpen, maybe the long-term closer for Texas in a year or so. So where are you at right now on Teodo, and what do you think his role is long-term?
Yeah, Teodo's interesting. It's fascinating that they've been committed to him as a starter, and he's been a pretty good one at that. You know, I thought that the AFL experiment with him in the bullpen was kind of it, yet he came out as a starter this year. He threw 86 innings. He put up a sub-2 ERA. He struck out batters a rate north of 30%, but he also walked 14% of hitters he faced. Teodo's arsenal is electric. Yeah, fastball-slider combo is one of the better fastball-slider combos in the minors. But at the end of the day, it's just you don't know where it's going sometimes. And you get starts where Teodo looks like he's a really good starter long-term. I mean, he put up some starts last year, 11 strikeouts, no earned over 5, 10 strikeouts, no earned over 6. He had starts where he limited the walks, and then other starts where he would walk 4 or 5. So it's the volatility with Teodo that you get. The command is super inconsistent, like to put it nicely. You know, I think that at the end of the day, I still believe that he's a reliever, but the arm talent's undeniable, and I think that there's a good reason why they still want to continue to see if this guy can start, because the upside is through the roof. So, yeah, I think you look at, like, him and some of the other arms in the system, and, yeah, they've got a loaded crop of arms, so I'm totally fine with them continuing to develop him as a starter. If he moves to the bullpen, he could be in the back end of a bullpen and be pretty electric. So he could be a lot of fun, but yeah, I'm kind of curious at the end of the day what he ends up. Right now, I mean, he's probably more than likely a reliever, but they're committed, so we will see where it goes.
Yeah, that is really odd. I thought they would have, you know, after we saw him in the AFL, I was like, all right, that's kind of the path he's going to be taking, to be a reliever. But this wasn't the case. So I do, again, agree with you that it's, I'd say it's 60-40, 65-35 that he becomes a reliever. But like with Mizorowski, I think these two could end up being, it would shock me if, you know, fast forward 3 years from now and they're two of the top 10 best relievers in baseball for fantasy. I mean, that's the upside we're talking about there. With Teodo and with Mizorowski. So, I mean, yeah, you'd like them more as starters, but would you rather have an erratic and inconsistent starter, or would you rather have more of a high-end reliever? It's kind of like, you know, which profile do you value more, or which outcome, I should say, do you value more? I mean, sometimes, I mean, that reliever might not sound as sexy as a starter profile, but that might be the best thing for that particular pitcher, so... So I'm not out on either one, because I think that outcome of a high-end reliever is still there. And yet Teodo is very, very exciting. No doubt about that. Keep it right in the AL West. Go over to the Athletics with Luis Morales, who I think we both can agree is their best pitching prospect by a decent margin in that system. Not a lot of great pitching talent in that system, not like Atlanta. But Morales... was the one that really wanted to talk about him, so I'll let him rant about Luis Morales. But just to quickly get my part out here, I mean, I think we got to remember that he hadn't pitched in, like, I think it was like 18 months or even close to 2 years after he defected, got back on the mound in 2023, and it's had pretty good results since then. It was a 286 ERA in 2023 in 44 innings. Last year was only 422. In 22 starts for High A Lansing, but I don't think that paints the entire picture there. So I think, Chris, I'll let you kind of go on here with Luis Morales. You know, what do you think of him long term, and, you know, how high up rankings do you think he could rise in 2025?
Yeah, so Morales is interesting. I think that he's very undervalued in the fantasy space. It's weird because he's a guy that gets a lot of buzz on real life lists, but he never gets hype in fantasy circles. But I do think Morales is a really solid arm. He's 6'3" with projection. Like you mentioned, he hasn't pitched all that much. He actually started the season late due to an injury, and he's slowly built up all year, which the results, they were what they were. I mean, he put up a 4.22 ERA. He had some in August, honestly. It was pretty rough, but we're looking at a fastball that sits 97. It's touched triple digits. He holds the velocity deep in the starts. You know, he gets good IVB at the top of the zone. I think the command will need to improve. Like, it's an inconsistent fastball for Morales, but it's got the stuff. He gets whiffs when it's located well. That curveball is really good, low to mid 80s, good depth and sweep, two plane breaking pitch. I think it's a plus pitch. He misses a ton of bats with it. Again, location, location, location is kind of the name of the game. But the changeup has good fade, you know, third pitch, upper 80s. I think that he sells it pretty well. It all comes down to strike throwing for Morales. And he's young. He's had some injuries that he's dealt with. And he, you know, has missed time pitching. So at the end of the day, like, I think Morales is pretty advanced with the arsenal. He's going to have to learn how to throw more strikes. I think if he does, then he's an easy top 100 prospect. He may already be a top 100 prospect. But there's a very high upside with Morales. But the floor could be pretty high, too, as a high leverage reliever if all fails, because we know the arsenal is capable. Yeah, there's a wide range of outcomes. I think that a healthy 2025 with slightly better command would be the goal for Morales in 2025. If he does those things, then he's certainly going to move up a lot of people's boards. But I think he's very undervalued in the dynasty space and someone that you could capitalize on pretty easily.
Yeah, he's just all these Oakland guys. Except for, I think you say that about a lot of the Athletics prospects. I mean, Nick Kurtz isn't really undervalued, but a lot of the other ones are. And I think Morales absolutely is one of those as well. I guess, again, you got to remember that he didn't pitch for like 2 years. So kind of a bigger speed bump in his development, so to speak. And he came back and has been pretty impressive. So kind of wonder as he gets more and more time under his belt again. I think you can see him really rise up rankings. I don't have him quite as high as Chris does, but definitely an intriguing prospect on the pitching side for sure. But let's close out our second episode here with our breakout picks for this position. Chris, who is your breakout pick?
Ooh, yeah. I haven't picked one yet. You can go and hit yours because I've debated several of them, and I will pick after you, actually.
All right. I will go Moises Chassé of the Philadelphia Phillies, formerly in the Baltimore Orioles organization. He was there for a couple of years, 2021, 2022, 2023, and then part of 2024, then went over to Philadelphia midseason and kind of been steadily on the rise for the last couple of years. You know, pretty solid year overall for Chassé in 2024. Had a 3.59 ERA, 1.20 whip in 80 and a third innings, pitched at both high A, and then he got four starts in for Double-A Reading later on in the season. He was really good in those four starts. Had 35 strikeouts to seven walks in 19 and two-thirds innings. So he was absolutely mowing them down. I mean, it's a four-pitch mix. He's a fastball, which is in the mid-90s. He's gotten up 97, 98 at times. It's a lower slot, big, IVB pitch. It's really like kind of the overall blend of velocity and movement profile on that pitch. Changeup, sweeper, slider, all three of which he can miss bats with. The slider definitely is a big swing and miss offering. So is the sweeper. I think both of those pitches are going to be kind of help him have a higher strikeout rate, as we saw from him this past year. He had 124 strikeouts overall in 80 and a third innings this past year, 37.1% strikeout rate, though command and control does need a little bit of work. I mean, no, it's not a major red flag like it is for so many other names we talked about in this episode and the last episode, but he had a walk rate around 12%. I say it's fringe average command and control right now, so I would love to see that improve a bit, but he's still very young, 21 years old, won't turn 22 until middle of 2025 in the early part of June. So he already has kind of risen up rankings a decent bit in 2024, but I think that's going to continue in 2025, where you could see him as a top 10 pitching prospect and a top 50 overall prospect, by even midseason if he starts hot and kind of continues that strong finish from last year that carries over into 2025. So Moises Chassé is my pick there. Chris, who have you landed on for yours?
All right, so I'm going to go with an absurd one, just given Yeah, I think that there's enough love with Brody Hopkins. There's enough love with Jackson Baumeister. Yeah, I mean, those guys definitely, they already kind of broke out, in my opinion. So I'm going to go with a name that probably most don't know. It's Twins right-handed pitcher Adrian Bohorquez, Bohorquez. I hope I didn't butcher the pronunciation, Bohorquez. But here's what you need to know about him. He'll be 20. He's a 6'1" righty. Began the year in the complex, went to single A, put up some really good numbers. He was honestly utterly dominant as he went to single A Fort Myers. You look, he may have walked too many guys this year. He had a 12.3% walk rate on the season, but his strike rate was actually better than league average at 62%, and he struck out north of 28% of batters. Fastball, really, really good pitch. It's a high riding 95-mile-an-hour fastball, topped out at 98. His pitch is pretty impressive to me. You look at the pitch data on it. It's not like the super flat VAA that you want to see, but from his 6-foot release height, he gets good IVB. He hits the zone enough with it. And ultimately, I think he can miss more bats with it than he did in single A. And already the results were there. You look at the rest of the arsenal. Bohorquez throws a changeup, slider, curve, like, it's a pretty deep arsenal, honestly. The changeup development was big in 2024 for Bohorquez. And I realize I've said his name different several times now, but yeah, it's firm. I mean, it sits 90. You want to see a little more separation. He only uses it to lefties, but it's a nice platoon neutralizing offering. The slider is a gyro slider with 2,700 RPM. He'll blend a cutter at times, but I look at the curve, and it's a two-plane break, negative 16 inches of IVB. It's substantial and good sweeping action, upper 70s, near 3,000 RPM. So Adrian Bohorquez is an interesting arm in the Twins org that I'd watch pretty closely. I think that he stands a pretty good chance. Like, if you're looking for an arm that nobody knows about, like, that's the guy to take a shot on. Like, I think enough people are, like, I would say that Ty Johnson's going to take a step forward, Jackson Baumeister, Brody Hopkins, but like those guys are already known. So I want to throw you in a pretty absurd name. Like, I think Adrian Bohorquez is the guy to look at.
All right. That wraps up our second episode of Pitching Prospects. There will be no third episode, but we have two more episodes for Dynasty coming at you with two great guests. Don't want to give those guests away just yet, but you'll hear from them very soon with episode one of the Dynasty side coming out on Friday. But until then, everyone take care.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.